Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Forecast is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
What sort of future do you think we're heading for? How will we live as we slip into the 21st century?
Welcome to Forecast, episode 52. I'm Tom Merritt.
And I'm Scott Johnson.
And this is the episode where we invite two guests on every week to help us look into the future and make our best guesses about what the world will be like down the road a piece. As my dad used to say,
down the road a piece. That's awesome.
My grandma used to say that. Somebody used to say that.
Yeah, that's old. That's very old school. It's a great way to talk about the future, I think. I think we should talk about the future the way the past did.
All right, so let's introduce our guests. Joining us today, Denise Howell, host of This Week in Law. You can find her works at bagandbaggage.com. Welcome, Denise.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Scott.
Hello.
Great to be here.
It's good to have you on. Also joining us is Ayaz Akhtar, host of thisoldnerd.com, amongst several other podcasts.
Hi, guys.
Well, you don't host This Old Nerd among the other podcasts. You host This Old Nerd and other podcasts.
I don't do them concurrently, no. They happen sequentially.
Right. So we're very excited to have you all on and do a little predicting. But, of course, we always start with a prediction from one of our listeners. And this one comes from Earthquake Bamba. That is the name that is on the email address. Scott and Tom, in Forecast 48, someone mentioned that we could send the ocean into orbit so that we could have more land to live on and still have access to the water when we need it. I remember loving that idea. A week later, I picked up a used book on a Security Now Steve Don't Call Me William Gibson recommendation called The Caves of Steel by Isaac Asimov. About two-thirds of the way through the book, I found this. The oceans could be frozen and dragged out into space where they could circle the Earth as moonlets of ice. There they would be, always available for use, while the ocean bottoms would represent more land for exploitation, more room to live. I know that all the forecasts are not completely original, but I found it interesting that the book was originally published in 1954.
Holy crap. Honestly, we didn't, we rarely have anything that we come to the table with that we think is from somebody else, but to have it be that accurately from that story or to feel like our prediction was so close to that one is a little creepy, to be honest.
We've had this happen before, though, where we've mentioned something in the course of the conversation, and then so it turns out like, oh, yeah, Robert Heinlein wrote about that, or Asimov, or Arthur C. Clarke, because those guys were so prolific and so visionary.
Yeah, I just wonder if this lends credence to the idea that there are no new ideas under the sun, that everybody everywhere has come up with something before, even if we think we've been super original about it, and this is maybe another example of that.
Ayaz, did you sci-fi check all of your predictions? Are you sure you didn't steal them? Or did you on purpose steal them from sci-fi books?
I would bet that somebody else has thought of everything I've thought of already. But no one's going to say it like I will.
It's hard, right? I mean, Denise, you must deal with this looking at law all the time, right? There's no new ideas under the sun.
That's true. And one of my ideas is partially cribbed from Cory Doctorow, so I'll get that out of the way right up front.
See, good disclosure.
This is true in the world of webcomics, by the way. This always happens. Somebody will think they have a brilliant idea, they'll draw it up, and the next day they'll publish it, and then about 20 people will say, I hate to be the guy that does this, but so-and-so did this a year ago, and they show you an example, and you're just like, oh, it's really frustrating. But I just think it's the way of the human race, and until we figure out a way to populate other planets and let them come up with their own unique ideas based on their new crazy environments, which I think kind of applies to this show, then we'll have some new ideas under the same sun.
All right, well, let's rip ourselves off from the past 51 episodes and start with short-term predictions. These are things you think will happen sooner rather than later, and Ayaz, we'll start with you. What do you got?
Okay, for my short-term prediction, I'm going to say this is going to happen within the next, I'd say, 2 to 5 years. We're going to see a lot more subscription-based services out there for non-consumables. So, like, there's things like Zipcar out there, so if you don't want to rent a car, you can have a subscription to a car. Something like Netflix has pretty much trained us for the same thing. I'm expecting to see something like this maybe one day at Home Depot. You can just pay a flat rate and use what you need and then give it back. And maybe even stuff for babies, because you don't need a car seat after 3 months. You need a new car seat, so you can keep trading your things back and forth because you're paying a flat rate. So I think that's probably going to happen, or crazy co-op stuff like in places in Vermont.
Wait, you're going to subscribe to babies?
You would subscribe to all the paraphernalia you need for a baby. We have this new stuff, guy.
Not the baby itself. Okay.
No. Like, you wouldn't actually get a new baby every 3 months. You would get...
I only like 3 months old. Once they hit 6 months, I just want to replace them with another 3 month old.
That would be baby leasing. That's not a subscription, I think. But it would be things like, you know, car seats are things that need to be changed out, or like a stroller, or even a case like... In the suburbs here, you don't necessarily need to have a lawnmower 7 days a week. You only need it once. So, like, to be able to access these things, I think if there was a, you know, like a store down the road that just lets you do this on a regular basis. So it's not a rental, because renting is somewhat cumbersome. You got to sign up for insurance, all this other fun stuff. I think these subscription-based stuff where you have access to non-consumables will probably be a lot bigger than they are right now.
I really like this idea, not just in the generalized, like, sort of mowing the lawn thing and I need a snowblower when the snow starts to fall and stuff like that. But the baby thing has some serious merit, no pun intended, Tom. And what I mean by that is I've got three kids. I've raised three kids all through those diaper years and all that stuff. Now they're all well beyond that. Not that well beyond. I'm not ancient. Oh, yes. Hello?
Yeah, you're still
anyway.
There.
Okay. Anyway, the idea that I could get a stroller, like, let's say it's a baby care kit. And the baby care kit comes with regular rotation of new diapers. It comes with formula, and it comes with the furniture you need to, like, change the baby, stroller the baby, backpack it, put it in the car seat. And they call that the toddler kit or the something kit, the terrible twos kit. And then eventually you graduate up to this other kit that includes, like, a training potty and a freaking book about how to do that, and their first books they get to read. And that makes a lot of sense to me. Instead of paying for this stuff, collecting it, I still have a room somewhere here that's just full of kids' baby stuff we'll never use again.
And then you got to figure out how to get rid of it. And the used market on this stuff doesn't exist because nobody wants used baby stuff. But if there was, like, a company out there that was refurbing these things, and, like, every 3 months, like, the car seat would change or the stroller would change. That's just one idea, because I've been stuck with this, like, this inundation of junk that I'm like, I don't need this 3 months from now. I'm like, what do you mean? Oh, when he's over 25 pounds, we're going to need something new.
This sounds less subscription-based than that sort of what was that service that allowed you to trade your CDs around? You would actually send one of your CDs off and another CD would come.
I don't remember the name of that, but I know what you're talking about.
Columbia House, right?
No. The one, it was actually sharing. You didn't buy them. You just shared it. So you owned a CD, you sent it to this company, and then they would send you a CD that someone else had sent to them. Turned into a music sharing, like a digital music sharing service eventually.
Right, and didn't they do it with games too?
Yeah, it worked with games as well.
Yep. Can't remember.
But they had great branding. Because we can't remember what they were called.
Absolutely. Fantastic branding.
But yeah, so that's what it sounds like you're suggesting, Ayaz, is sort of like a rotational service. Well,
that was part of it. Like, I still think with places like Home Depot, like for tools, like you could just basically pay them a couple of bucks. So you have this ongoing relationship with the store. I'm thinking really it'd probably catch on faster with smaller stores like a True Value or one of these smaller mom and pop places that are willing to say, like, this happened to me. Like, somebody just, like, loaned me their truck because I needed to grab some... extremely large pieces of wood. So I was loaned this thing. Now, that doesn't happen everywhere. That's why I figure a subscription fee would make a lot more sense for things like that. So you don't have to go through the horrible process of a rental, because renting should be more like renting DVDs, not a car.
Burke, one of our producers here at Twit, would like to call BS on your prediction. He's part of a tool lending library in San Francisco. He's had a card for 5 years.
Whoa.
Okay, well, I said it's going to catch on.
This isn't past.
You know, it, once again, an example of great branding. There was a toy service that I subscribed to when my son was really little, and maybe the chat room can come up with the name. But it was a similar idea where you could browse their selections and then pick out two or three things that they would send you at a time. It was a subscription thing, so you paid a monthly fee, and then you got to keep the item as long as you wanted, and then you sent it back when you were done, and you got new items. And it worked really nicely. And the things that you got were in great shape. They'd been either, you know, refurbished or all cleaned up. They came to you like new when you got them. And then, you know, as soon as you had their utility was gone, then you sent them back. So that seemed to work really well.
It's kind of what families do now. I mean, when my sister was having kids, it was roughly the same time we did, but they were a little bit ahead of us. And so she would pass stuff on to us, essentially giving us their, you know, they were basically hand-me-downs, but it was great because, you know, a good crib is a good crib. And it's not like, you know, a used crib is some horrible nightmare. It's actually a pretty good, you know, value to not have to go out and spend another $200 on a new crib. So we would pass that down. And we since passed that on to my younger sister when she was having children. And so really all this is taking that sort of established family unit norm, extended family norm, and taking it out a little bit and making it something that's available to anybody, regardless of whether they have family living around or they're, you know, talking to family at all or even have family.
We could subscribe to a family.
Sure,
that's right.
Not?
That's what this is.
Just send you a new mom every couple of weeks. I'm tired of this one. I think that was actually a Kleenex campaign. They let you choose your mom. It was a terrible, terrible ad campaign. Nobody quite understood it.
Yeah. But yet, it was good branding because you did remember that it was Kleenex.
I just remember it was just so horrible that it stood out. Like, there's a bunch of old bickering women and they're like, chooseyourmom.com. It was like,
oh, that's awful.
What is this? What does this have to do with tissues?
All right, let's move over to you, Denise. These are the short-term predictions, things you think are happening in the near future, but still in the future. What do you got for us?
So within the next 5, 10, possibly 20 years, I think we're going to look back on today's era and reminisce about how much privacy we actually had or felt that we had. Because I think gradually our privacy is slipping away and soon it will be gone entirely. But it won't be taken from us. We'll give it over voluntarily in the way of a trade for either convenience or some kind of discount. If you look at what Groupon's doing, if you look at people who want to do the right thing by the schools in their communities, for example, I don't use any loyalty cards except at my local grocery store where a percentage of everything that I buy there goes to our school and they make $10,000 a year off of that. So I'm motivated to actually give them over my data in that situation. And I think, you know, more and more they're going to find motivators to get people to voluntarily give over their valuable personal data to the point where basically all our lives are being shared in one way or another within the next 5, 10, 20 years. What do you guys think?
That is super interesting because I keep coming to this issue over and over again with people saying, why are you so comfortable just sort of putting yourself out there? You're sort of open on Facebook and Twitter and all these other services and you know, people will know where you live. And we have a big conference here every year and people come and see me and, you know, why am I so open to do that? And I sometimes ask myself, I'm doing it because I'm caught up in the energy of it. I'm caught up in the excitement of what it means to sort of connect everybody in this way. And the big question I ask myself is, will I regret this someday? Like, will there come a day where I'm like, man, I really laid it all out there and I can't take all of it back. You know, so even if I wanted to, if I suddenly wanted to go into hiding, I couldn't do it. And I know I'm not alone in that. So it's a very interesting question that seems to come up on this show, you know, fairly often.
What I'd love to see happen is for someone like the vendor relationship management community, VRM, which Doc Searles is spearheading at Harvard, to actually gain a foothold, not just with passionate people who hear about what they're doing and think, hey, that's a great idea, but also with commercial entities that think, hey, this is how we're going to get people to understand that it's worth their while to work with us in this way. And what it stands to do is give users the control over who has what and how they can use it rather than having it all, you know, be a piecemeal kind of decision. The user would be the central hub of their information and then would be able to make some fine-grained decisions as to how it's going to be used by whom.
I think our fundamental conception of what privacy is will change along with that. I see it already in people who are growing up in a world where fewer things are private, that they don't think it's as big of a deal when some things are made public, that older folks like me think like, well, wait a minute, that's not okay. You can't just take my user ID and give it to them. There's a different conception being developed. And I think maybe 20 to 30 years from now, we'll just be used to living in public the way we've become used to living in great numbers, right? I mean, back in, I don't know, 500 BC, the idea of 10 million people all living in one city would have sounded like a nightmare. But we and maybe it still is, but we figured out how to pull it off. And I think we'll get used to this idea that, you know what, some stuff is just public and it's public for everybody. So we're not going to be, you know, the flip side will be we're not going to be as judgmental about things we find out about other people, or at least we'll be judgmental in a different way than we are now.
I think you guys are right. I think the expectation of privacy is really evolving in the past couple of years. I mean, I think it was Zuckerberg said something like privacy is dead or something like that. And I think at this point, I think Denise, you're right. I think what's going to happen, though, is because everybody's information is out there, it's almost just like when 10 million people are all in one city, it becomes anonymous again because it's all out there. So it's almost like because it's out there, it's obscure. And if yours is not out there, now it becomes a little bit odd. Why is your information hidden? You know, like when I think it was Eric Schmidt, he was saying, you know, you shouldn't need privacy unless you're doing something wrong, which was like, and that's paraphrasing, it's not the actual quote. But that's the kind of thing, like I'm also very public on Facebook and Twitter because I'm like, all right, look, I'm gonna treat this like real life. If I'm outside, the internet is outside, okay? Everything is outside. So if people are mad that they can, on Facebook, you can check me in on a restaurant. Well, you can see me in the restaurant. I'm physically there. So I don't really understand why people get so angry about that right away. But I just figure everyone's going to get used to that.
I remember flipping out when caller ID came to telephones. And if you think about it, it wasn't that long ago. It was like, what, early 90s, mid-90s or something?
That's a really good example.
I remember seeing that and going, I don't think I'm comfortable people knowing my number and my name and that I'm calling them. It just seemed weird. Even though in most cases it's me calling them on purpose. Like I actually want them to pick up and talk to me. So them knowing who I am is not, you know, shouldn't have been that big a deal. But I remember it being a big deal to me and how I and so many others have lost that fear or let that drop is probably along the lines of what Tom is saying.
Yeah, exactly. We've just gotten used to like, oh, when you call somebody, they're going to see your phone number. We don't think twice about it. And I think a lot of things in privacy are going to be that way.
There are a few different leverage points, I think, that come into play. One is economics. We've talked about that. Another one is legal, because, for example, think of the way that Netflix operates. If you're a Netflix customer, you can go wherever you can access a Netflix account. You can go to your friend's house and use their DVD player that maybe has access to Netflix. If you set it up to authorize your account, you can watch all of your Watch Instantly stuff at their house, even though you're not at home at your home anymore. So this whole notion of place shifting is taken care of by the fact that, you know, your account travels with you. And as more and more entertainment providers begin to see the value of knowing what their people are watching, they're not going to matter. They're not going to care so much about controlling where something's happening. You know, you can go to your friend's house. It's okay. If you are who you are, you have your same rights. But, you know, the trade-off you're going to pay for that is they're going to know what you're watching everywhere.
And that's where it gets sticky, right? Because, and I don't want to beat this horse to death with this stick I have in my hand, but I, you know, like, for example, I have a friend, and I swear this is a friend. I'm not talking about myself here. But a friend that was super interested in this Netflix movie that was about the history of the adult entertainment industry and film specifically, and then VHS and like that whole period of porn exploding into the home, right? And he really wanted to see this. He doesn't really look at porn, isn't that interested in it, and was just fascinated by the industry and how this, like, this industry, you know, is built around all of these sort of quote unquote passions, but the industry itself is still a business that has to run. And that was really interesting to him. The problem is he had his Netflix stuff. He's got his settings so that people can see in his, you know, group of friends or whatever, what he's been watching. And if you are a potential employer or something, you see that this guy's watching this, you may have the initial reaction that, oh, he's watching something about porn. He is not going to work here, versus somebody, you know, looking at it and going, oh, well, maybe he watched it because he's just got this pure interest in, you know, the business aspect of this documentary or something. My point is that those are really difficult distinctions to make. And so privacy ends up being really important to the guy who may have watched that for purely educational reasons, but is now looked upon by all his friends and family and neighbors and coworkers as some kind of pervert.
Not a pervert.
No, he's not.
I told him
he should just watch it and feel okay about it. It's all good.
If we all watch it, it's not weird, is it? It's just if one of us watches it, then we all ostracize that person for doing something that well, everyone would have. Just if you're going to be tracked, I mean, I think at some point, you know, you're gonna see this. Like, I know I'm very protective of stupid pictures of me, even though I make a whole bunch. But in the future, everyone's going to have that. It'd be like, oh yeah, everyone's got their set of stupid college pictures that's on the internet everywhere. So eventually, this kind of thing that looks to be embarrassing will probably just, again, be embarrassing for all. So it'll just be kind of washed away.
All right, let's move on to long-term predictions. These are the longer view, more than 100 years, or we're all going to be in flying cars someday, that kind of stuff. And Denise, we'll keep it with you. What is your long-term prediction?
So this is where I cribbed a bit from Corey. I think that the judicial system, is as we know it today, is going to become largely irrelevant. And that lawyers who try cases and handle that aspect of the law are going, you know, they're the ones that get all the headlines and all the attention in the legal field now. But I think that they're going to find themselves slowly and slowly edged out. And the people who manage the terms of deals, arrangements, rights management between parties, that those people are going to find themselves fully employed as the judicial system moves toward something that's much more automatic, where there's dispute resolution that happens instantly and algorithmically and keeps people out of the courtrooms and keeps things moving along more smoothly. Now, I think there are going to be hitches with this, you know, because machine intelligence isn't going to be perfect and it's not going to get the nuances. I can hear, you know, if any of my colleagues in the legal field are listening to me right now, they're shaking their fists in anger saying, you know, there's no way a machine can replace a judge or a good lawyer as your advocate, but they can do a lot. And to the extent that they do get it wrong sometimes, I think this is one of those areas where people are going to be willing to accept that trade-off because of the convenience and the cost savings and everything else that's going to be involved in the judicial system changing radically from the way it is now.
So Denise, do you see it as kind of analogous to what's happened in the medical industry? And by that, I mean very specific things like I could see doctors in the 70s or something saying no machine will ever be as good as I am at this procedure. But now we have lots of machines that do lots of procedures for us. We haven't eliminated doctors. In fact, we've needed more specialization and we've needed doctors who can operate this kind of equipment, MRIs and stuff like that, in a way that is, appropriate to the situation. And so if anything, it seems like it's gone. It's like saying we want to live in a paperless society, but all the things that we have digitally are making us make more paper all the time. Do you feel like it's kind of like that, where lawyers will, it isn't an issue of eliminating lawyers, it's an issue of them taking on maybe either a different role or better specialization or something like that?
Right. I think you've got that, that the lawyers, there are lawyers now who never see the inside of a courtroom and do focus their practices on, you know, keeping people out of court and making arrangements between people that will, you know, manage their understandings and their rights and responsibilities without them ever having to go to court, you know, unless somebody breaches their arrangement. And I think we'll see, you know, more fine tuning of those sorts of things on the front end, more upfront agreements, sort of on the model of Creative Commons, along the model of what YouTube is doing when they let you, you know, they broker the transaction of, you know, you want to lay a musical track in your video, okay, here's some you can use. Those agreements have all been, you know, pre-made for the user, and the user can just go on and do what they're authorized to do. So I think those are, you know, early models of where a larger part of the legal system will go that, you know, will have so much, it sort of goes to all of our privacy going away as well, because if all your banking is automated, all of your various dealings with the world are so transparent, it's really hard to have a dispute with somebody. You know, your rights are managed up front, and what you've done is sort of an open book.
It's the efficiency of technology, plus would cost also be one of the things that drives this? It's become one of the things that drives settling out of court, is that nobody really wants to pay to go to trial, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think cost drives it in a different way, that as you said, nobody wants to pay to be in court. And as people get more and more up in arms about that situation, I think the judicial system begins to just break down. You know, it's not only that you don't want to pay, at some level you simply can't. There's this stratification of society. There are some people who can litigate their big dollar issues, but the vast majority of us just can't do it.
Ayaz, you've done some legaling, right?
Yeah, sort of. Yeah, I have some degrees and some, I passed some tests, but, Denise, I was kind of curious about the scope of this automation. Are you talking about like just the businesses doing this? Or are you talking about, I mean, businesses right now, you know this, that they, a lot of them have a lot of deals in arbitration. If something goes wrong, it goes to an arbiter. It doesn't technically go to a judge. So are you saying that like for even small, like a small claims thing or like a dispute with a neighbor or something, that would be also automated? Because that sounds... So
yeah, this is where I get to crib from Corey, because if folks have read Down and Out in the Magic Kingdom, he has this great little episode where I think it was a hit, kind of a fender bender car accident between two of his characters, and they get out and I think they're using their phones. It's sort of like there's an app for that, and they immediately you know, plug in the data and they get back a response as to, you know, who was at fault and what the consequence needs to be, and then they move on with their lives.
I wish they'd do that for insurance. That sounds good to me. Actually.
Yeah.
My favorite part of this idea, Denise, is that we wouldn't get a lot of jury trials. Is that right?
Right. And really trials of any kind.
So no jury duty.
Wait a minute. Now, the computers that program the algorithm, the people who actually program the algorithm have to be your peers then, right?
You'll be judged by an algorithm programmed by your peers.
Well, that's the big fear, right? So I was listening, I think, Tom, were you on Twit? Was that what I was watching when you were talking about semantic search and how something could be aware whether you were a geek by, you know, if you put in a search for Windows, you would get back different results based on who you were and what it knew about you, and maybe not, you know, window cleaning services. But what if you're the geek who really needs window cleaning services? You know, it's frustrating when the algorithm makes assumptions for you that are incorrect. So I think that, you know, that's a big problem with this system and something that would need, you know, why it's a very long-term prediction.
Right,
we would need a lot of AI that works well.
Yeah, a lot of self-awareness and algorithm complexity.
I mean, I even have a tiny example of something that worked for me. So somebody had copied some artwork of mine and was selling it on some site, like a Zazzle site or something. I don't remember what it was exactly. And I was all up in arms about it. And what bugged me about it is I didn't really, you know, I had Creative Commons licenses created, but none of them allowed for this kind of use. And I thought, well, what do I do? I don't have a lawyer specifically that can help me do this. And I had no friends that could really help me do it. So I got online and I looked for a standard formatted cease and desist letter, and I filled in all the hooey, all the extra crap you need, and I sent it off to this guy, and he immediately tore it down and was so sorry and, you know, backed way off and stuff. I mean, in a way, I just automated a legal proceeding in a very real way. So this doesn't sound that crazy to me. It seems like, sure, it's maybe baby steps and sure, it's things like this first, but that doesn't sound that far off.
Just be careful where you rip off that letter, though. Make sure you have rights to it, right?
That's the other thing.
All right. Long-term prediction for you, Mr. Ayaz Akhtar. When you look more distantly into the distant future with your distant-looking things, what do you see?
I see the gap between the smart and the dumb increasing to the point where smart people flee from the dumb people. So what's going to happen is we're going to have nations where it's IQ-based. But we're going to have like two, effectively, the dumb and the smart. But one of the problems is that the dumb have to have somebody who's pretty smart so they keep stuff running. And this really smart side is going to have like the dumbest guy on the smart side. So they're going to just kind of tolerate him. So eventually I'm thinking you're going to have nations built on IQs. So that way you can actually have smart people with smart people.
This is a natural separation. Like these groups will naturally repel each other and set up. Yeah. I kind of see this happening with ideological splits in the country now. Is it that kind of thing? The same idea?
Well, yeah. I mean, if you think about it, it's like you'll see, you know, the IQ, one nation will be like, you know, IQ 275, and the other one will be like IQ Jersey Shore, right? You want to just get away from them. Because I know like where I live right now, I am moving back to the city. I can't stay here. This is not right. So I'm doing it now. I figure in 100 years, people will be doing this all the time.
Wow.
I've often postulated that it might be better to set up countries. Not that we set up countries, that's the problem. But if we were, to set them up by political viewpoint, right? So all the people who believe that, you know, that religion should play a huge part in the government should have a country for that. And then all the people who think that there should be absolutely no rules and it should be anarchy, they'd have a country that they can live in. And then, you know, fill in all the rest of the gaps, right? And just
how do you patrol the borders of those lands?
Well, we use your algorithm, Denise.
That's so handy.
We adapt that, for the international disputes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's the problem is how do you keep everybody in their borders? But theoretically, everybody would be so happy in their land that you know they'd be all right, or maybe it'd be by planet, so it'd be a lot harder to get off.
Maybe the resources would be allocated properly. I mean, so instead of this, like, if you guys have seen Idiocracy, it's a lot like that, except I don't want to live in Idiocracy's America because that scares me a lot. I just want to, like, run away from this particular place. So that's on my brain right now.
Well, and what's intelligent? I mean, that there is a certain amount of arrogance in your prediction. I mean, how do you address that? It's sort of like...
Oh, okay. Well, you know, that's right. Back to Idiocracy. You know, the dumb pretty much just outbreed the intelligent at times, because intelligent people sometimes go, I don't have the money or resources to sustain another life. And so they usually have kids when they're older. They only have one or two. And then the numbers start really switching. So you start getting a lot more dumb people, a lot less intelligent people. So these intelligent people have to go somewhere. So that way, the resources in their country... So these people will probably be, I don't know, a lot of engineers, you know, some smart people over there with big degrees. And who's going to decide that? I don't know if you want to actually have some standardized tests or whatever. But this is a long-term prediction. I don't have everything worked out yet. give me about 100 years, I'll have it figured out.
It seems like the people that require you to take breadth courses in college would get involved here. The people who are upset that the tech bloggers talk only to tech bloggers and the political bloggers talk only to political bloggers, that we need some sort of rounding out of our existence that would be lost in this scenario.
Yeah. Yeah, the argument that people always make that the internet and this technology boom that we're in general has segmented us, not brought us to more people. In other words, the idea is that, well, with this open of a communication system, we should all be much more tolerant and understanding and much more sort of connected to lots of different kinds of people. And instead, it seems like it's just set up these little camps where like-minded folks can go and pat each other on the back and not really pay attention to what's happening over there. And I don't think that's what anyone intended or anyone predicted at this point. I don't think anybody saw that was the future of what the internet could do. And I may be overstating it, but it does seem like we're sort of doing that.
And also, I think one thing that may be an issue is you're reacting to ignorance, not necessarily unintelligence. What if you just had an educational system instead of what we have now? A lot of those people that are ignorant and maybe count in your dumb category right now will turn out to be actually very intelligent. They just had no education. They had no access to sharpen their critical thinking.
The super smart, the people who would figure out this entire plan, so they're obviously beyond me. They're very, very smart. They'll pick out the dumb ones and save them, that who are not really dumb. You see?
Oh, so there's a third category of super smart people.
Well, I mean, it's going to, you know, that
really think you're dumb.
Exactly. Like, I'm going to be the dumbest guy in one level, and there's going to be like Stephen Hawking will be like the king of, but this is 100 years from now, so we don't know who that guy will be. You see what I'm saying there? There's going to be a whole other, it's going to keep causing fragments, right? That's why I said nations. It's going to be a bunch of them. And eventually, first it'll start with two, and then it'll keep splitting.
I'm with the chat room. They all want to see Ayaz's neighbors that he's having this hard time with right now.
Everybody wants to be able to visit your neighborhood.
Come to Croton on Hudson. Come on, I dare you.
Wait, what are you in England? Merry old England, Croton on Hudson.
I'm in merry old upstate New York.
Uh huh.
So,
all right. Well, we're going to stay in merry old upstate New York for your crazy ass prediction, one that's really far out there. Time frame doesn't matter. What do you got?
Okay. So after we get this whole immortality thing down, or we're made of cheese, or the aliens have enslaved us. Okay. So it's like thousands of years from now, people will be programmed with expiration dates that'll be stamped on their feet because we can't just have populations growing infinite, you know, just infinitely. We don't have enough planets. I know you guys have crazy ideas of taking water out of oceans and putting them as moons and stuff. No, people are going to expire. You're going to have a stamp on your foot, and you get to show it to people like this. You're like, oh, it's my last day on Earth. You go to Taco Bell and get a free meal because all restaurants in the future are Taco Bell.
Right, of course. And then what happens when you reach that expiration date?
Oh, you just die. It's over.
So it's Logan's Run.
It's Logan's Run.
I've never seen Logan.
Oh, you have to watch Logan's Run.
Oh, yeah. You do have to watch that. Also, this is a historic moment in Forecast history. We've never seen anyone show their naked foot on camera before. So congratulations on that.
Yeah, we have only had video for a few months now. Thankfully, we've reached that milestone
first
quickly.
I'm glad.
Right. Who can name the cast of Logan's Run? Dirk Benedict, I want to say.
No. Without IMDb?
I've never seen this movie.
Yeah, Farrah Fawcett.
I had a chat room, like, killing me for this. They actually have expiration dates on their feet?
No, your hands started to glow when you reached 30, and then you had to go for ascension, which is essentially they just gas you.
Okay, so you drew parallels to what I said, and that's not the movie at all. I talked about a foot, not a hand.
Right.
Come on, did you back me up? You're a lawyer, you know what I'm saying? A hand is not a foot.
Michael York, that's it, yes. Thank you, chat room.
That's awesome. I'm a huge fan of that. I actually like Michael Bay's The Island. I know I'm kind of alone in that thing, but I like. It's basically an updated Logan's Run with better cameras and nice visuals and good sound. But the idea that we should have expiration dates, is that based on we should only all live to a certain age to control population, or are you basing that on we're going to have ways of genetically determining that I'm going to die of such and such at such and such date, and that's my expiration.
Best you know, before.
I was actually thinking that it would be basically you get a set number of years, and you'd basically be programmed when you were born. This is when you will die. You'll have like 87 years. That'll basically like the way Social Security is just like a set number. I think it'd just be a set number. I don't think it would be based on your genetic characteristics, because again, you know, if you have cured all things, you're not going to, like, you're also guaranteed not to die until that point. So like,
those
if you
in
shot,
super intelligent land don't get longer times?
I don't know. I don't actually have these two things coexisting because it's thousands of years. So things could have gone horribly wrong in between, you know?
All the dummies rose up. But,
I know you're saying that, you know, there wouldn't be any disease or whatever. They've fixed that, which is why you need the expiration date. I get that. But I'm sort of attracted to the idea of a best before date. Where it's not a hard execution, but they're like, yeah, we kind of examined you, and we think you're going to spoil after about this date. So don't plan anything for after that.
The first couple of ones, you know, be like milk. You don't really know if it's right or not. So, like, you might survive. I think they'd get it down within 20 minutes.
Smell Grandpa. He's past his date, but I think he's still good.
I didn't know my predictions all had to be within the same universe.
No, they don't. They don't. Denise was just, postulating maybe these could weave together somehow.
Yes. Wow, I didn't even think of it that way. Now my brain's going somewhere else.
See, there was an old Next Generation episode of Star Trek that featured David Ogden Stiers, who played Winchester on MASH. I don't know if anyone remembers this or not.
Oh, yeah, I remember that one.
He had that expiration date. That was their whole thing. His planet, his culture was that at a certain time of many years, and I don't even think they said it, I think it was like 50 years was something like that. And they always had this thing where when your time was up, it was up, and I think Deanna Troi's mother had kind of fallen in love with him or something, and she was just like ripping her hair out, like, how could you have a custom like this? This is terrible. You could live for another 30 years. You could be happy still. And he's like, nope, it's just the way things are. This is how we control things. And I remember at the time seeing that episode thinking, how do you get to a point, even in your crazy ass IaaS future, how do you get to a point where people stand for that? Like, they don't rise up and they don't, you know, do something about it. Then again, I've seen documentaries on North Korea that make me wonder what the hell's going on over there. So I mean, I'm talking out of my butt here, but it just seems like I would fight that tooth and nail. I would run like Logan. It is good to run.
Rada!
So there you go. I've proven there's no new thoughts under the sun because everything I've thought of already exists.
Yep. These things always happen.
In movie form, no less.
Let's move on over to Denise. When you look out 2,000 years or more, or wherever in the far distant future, or even nearby, and actually, this is crazy ass prediction. It could just be crazy. What do you got for us?
Well, actually, I don't know if this is that crazy. It actually seems to me pretty much more reasonable than the notion that we're all going to download ourselves into some sort of machine format. I like reading about the singularity, but I don't know if I buy into it that it could actually happen. As far as, you know, humans taking machine form or machines machines surpassing humans. Now that could happen and probably has in a number of ways. But, you know, as far as humanity morphing into something else, I don't know if I buy that. But what I do buy is more this concept of singularity memory. You know, one of the first things to go and the reason why we might need an expiration date is, you know, we start to forget things. And maybe this even plays into intelligence and classifying people by intelligence. Maybe they're intelligent, but they've just forgotten. So one of our most fallible human things is our memory. And that's something that's really easy to fix with technology. You know, I'm sure you guys use the web the way I do as your outboard brain.
Sure.
But what if we
that's actually how I know Laura Lindsay was in Logan's Run.
Right. There you go. So I'm predicting that before there's any sort of, you know, massive singularity kind of transformation of the human race, we do manage to solve our memory issue with the help of machine mechanics, that we have some sort of augmented memory that will help with Alzheimer's, just help, you know, help the likes of me when I'm trying to remember whether it's Dirk Benedict or Michael York. and when you think about it, the things that we set things down in today, they're just memory aids, right? Photos are memory aids. Books are memory aids. Helps us remember that story we came up with and told so beautifully. Letters, all other text, video. It's all just so we don't forget it. And the way that we're able to make use of that now is to keep it outside our brain. But I think some way or another, someone will find the memory, the external memory brain interface, and then think about what happens. You know, we don't have any more lost or corrupt data up there, and we can share it perfectly with one another. So if we think Facebook's privacy settings are complicated now, imagine trying to decide, you know, what part of your perfect memory that you're going to share with what individual in what context. But it also plays into the demise of the litigatory legal system, right? Because if you have perfect records that can be shared perfectly, it makes it easier to resolve disputes as well.
Unless you have a wiki lobe.
That's right.
Wait, I swear it didn't say that yesterday. Now it says the accident was my fault.
I crowdsourced that frontal lobe.
Yeah, but would there ever really be a truly perfect memory? Wouldn't it always be colored by how you experienced it? Like if you were being annoyed by your brother, but then you find out in his memory he was being very helpful. I mean, right. could you actually have a perfect one?
But you could compare those two records. A neutral third party could, I think.
But isn't that the same?
Think about how you could come to terms with your brother on this issue. So if you remember the situation very differently than he did, he felt like he was being helpful. You were 100% sure he wasn't being, and he was being spiteful or whatever. You put those two up, compare them, so you both can see how each other was feeling.
Okay.
Finally, a coming together of the great brothers, and they can figure out their crap and get past it.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. I like it. Although it does sound like somebody's going to end up trying to hack memories or...
Oh, yeah.
When you try to always make everything better, you just want to edit it. I mean, that's what happens with your memory anyway, right? You just go, oh, I remember that trip. We had such a great time. And then you forget, you know, there was, you know, the food was bad or the plane was late. And I mean, could that depress more people?
Well, this show ought to have a subtitle on it called You Could Hack It, because everything we talk about on here, every topic we've talked about tonight reminds me that you could hack it. Like your idea of, like the lawyer idea, figuring out how to get law more into technology. Oh my gosh, the hackers will have a heyday if they can do, you know, all this stuff to mess up the legal system. So hackers they're always on my mind on Forecast. And anytime anybody has any kind of prediction, I think, yeah, but what happens when blah? I mean, it's just, there's no way to not color these topics without having a little bit of a hacker mentality, I think.
Mm-hmm. All right, it's time to move on to four questions. This is the segment where we ask each of our guests four rapid-fire questions about the future. We ask them not to stop and think, but just give us that free association reaction to each question as it comes to them. And
oh,
Scott,
sorry.
That's
my turn. I'm terrible at this today because I closed it. And hang on just a second. Do we have any kind of like...
We each are going to ask one of you four questions. In this case, Scott Johnson will be asking I ask questions first. And then after that, I will ask Denise her four. Are you ready yet?
Hold on. Okay,
still
yes.
Loading.
I'm there.
All right.
I'm there. I'm there. So here we go. Iaz, are you sitting comfortably? You look like you are.
Sort of.
All right. Boy, that's really great not to have that up the whole time. All right, here's your four questions, and they'll come at you rapid-fire style. You do not have time to think about them. Answer them from the gut. What current waste product would you like to see recycled into a nutritious gruel for the future?
Grass. Grass clippings.
Okay. My dog is already testing your theory. What elevators to the moon, or I'm sorry, will elevators to the moon also feature elevator attendants, and will they be required to wear handsome vests?
Yes, and caps.
Fez-like right. caps?
Sort of. Yeah. And with don't forget the jackets need epaulets.
Right, I agree. Which mutation would you embrace more? The sprouting of flight-capable wings or the development of redundant organs?
Redundant organs right away, because then I don't need new clothes.
Oh, interesting.
What?
But you won't be able to...
If I had wings, I'd need new clothes.
Oh, okay. Okay, I get it.
Oh, right.
I thought the redundant organs somehow required you not to need new clothes. I was thinking about it backwards.
That's funny. And finally, fourth question. What overall percentage chance do you give any of this evening's predictions of actually coming true?
Uh-huh.
10%.
Whoa. That's probably high, but good job.
All right. Excellent. Excellent answers. Denise, are you ready?
I suppose so.
Are you sitting comfortably?
Yes.
Then we'll begin. Question number one, will copyright law ever get shorter, or will it just continue to lengthen to the natural life of the Disney Corporation?
To the heat death of the universe, perhaps.
Yeah. That's not the answer I wanted, but you're probably right. Question number two, will self-driving cars get speeding tickets?
Only when they're hacked.
Right. Well, that would make sense, right? When somebody hacks into the self-driving car, makes it go a little fast for their enemy, they get pulled over. I got it. Question number three. How long before the planetary colonies we eventually settle revolt against us?
Oh, I think they're revolting now.
We haven't even settled them and they're revolting.
The very intelligent ones are coming after the less intelligent ones.
They're already planning their attack.
Yes.
Question number four. If we evolve into a bodiless overmind, how will we be taxed? Because believe me, they're going to figure out how to tax a bodiless overmind.
Oh, it'll all be automatic. There won't be any thought about it. And no one will get upset about taxes anymore because it'll just be a part and parcel of our daily overmind existence.
It'll be like sales tax. You don't think about it as much.
That's right.
I see. Very good. Well, thank you both. This has been fantastic.
It's been really fun doing a show that consists of nothing but intuition and wild-ass guests.
Exactly. That is the brilliance of doing this show.
Yes.
And people seem to enjoy it. The chat room, thank you for predicting along with us. We stream this live, by the way, every Monday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern time. So if you'd like to watch us make the predictions in real time and throw suggestions at us in the chat room, by all means, go to live.twit.tv. Denise Howell, of course, host of This Week in Law, which you can find on Twit. Let the folks know all about that and anything else you got going on.
We record every Friday at 11 o'clock Pacific Daylight Time, soon to be Pacific Standard Time, and I am waiting for that.
Yeah.
We always have a fun panel of folks to talk about all of the issues in technology law that affect all of our lives. So please tune in.
And Iaz Akhtar, you can find every once in a while as a guest host on Tech News Today, but he also has his own podcast, This Old Nerd. Tell folks about that and the other stuff.
Sure. This Old Nerd is a show that shows you how to have the most tech-forward house or life you can possibly have. We had an episode where everything failed, and we're actually going to have our revenge, and we will be cutting cable TV next week. Actually, this Thursday. And then let's see, a whole bunch of other shows, one called Gigawatt with my friend Derek Chen. We talk about tech. There's a surprise. The G-Men Show, which is a very, very raunchy gadget podcast, and a whole lot of other stuff. You can find out all that stuff at iaz.me if you want to see that. Or follow me on Twitter. I always tweet about this stuff, @iaz.
Scott Johnson, another successful round of predictions, wouldn't you say?
I'd say this is this ranks right up there in some of my favorite episodes. I've just had great time with these guests. You guys were really great. We may want to mention that this weekend, Tom and I were going to be doing a little bit of coverage of the BlizzCon convention happening in Anaheim, California, right here on twitlive.tv. And we will be talking about the major announcements, what's going on at that convention. Maybe a few people on the ground will tell us their impressions. And we'll find out what's going on with one of the biggest video game developers in the world at BlizzCon 2010. Very much looking forward to that.
I'm glad you pointed that out, because we should also thank Denise for shifting This Week in Law for us to allow us to cover the opening keynote. Thanks again, Denise.
I'm going to be watching you guys. You know, Blizzard's in my backyard. I'm in Orange County, California.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we'll be covering the opening keynote on Friday, October 22nd, if you're listening to this before then, at 11 a.m. We'll also be covering the Warcraft Q&A session at 1:30 p.m. These times are Pacific. And then Current Geek Weekly, we'll kind of do a little roundup at 4 p.m. Pacific on that day. So check that out if you're into the Blizzard things, the StarCraft, the Diablo, the Warcraft, the World of Warcraft, all that stuff. I'm looking forward to that. Scott, anything else before we head out of here?
I think it's going to probably do it. Thanks, everybody, for coming in. And again, great guest today. Thank you, guys. And thanks to the chat room, who always offers so much insight. And they make us think about stuff that wouldn't be on the tip of our tongues during the show. And I'm really grateful for them tonight.
Don't forget to leave comments on our website, forecastpodcast.com, or send us an email. Our email address is forecastpodcast@gmail.com. We'll see you next week.
Bye-bye.
But tell me, it's 32 years away.
So does BlizzCon, like, make your neighborhood horrible?
No, it's not right in my backyard.
Well, I didn't think it was literally in your backyard. But I didn't know if it, like, caused traffic tie-ups or anything like that.
We used to, my son used to take swimming lessons right around the corner from Blizzard's world headquarters, and they have a huge orc statue out in front that he used to love getting out of the car and checking out.
Awesome.
It's quite nice.
Yeah, the nerds will be there in force this year. It's going to be a big one.
Scott, we have 5 frogs, so we probably need some frog pants.
Oh, yes. I would agree with that. Let's all put on our frog pants.
Frog pants check.
Simultaneously.
Time for a frog pants check.
Tell me, it's 32 years away.